Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Geekdom Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Crystal Williams, and welcoming back to the show after a little bit of a hiatus, we've got Lizzie.
Hi!
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We've all had a busy couple months, so there's been a lot of hiatuses and stuff. Jazzy recently came back too, so it's been good. But yeah.
One of these days we'll get the whole gang back together.
Yes. Yeah, we will. We'll have a whole Scooby gang. I thought about us doing a marathon not only of Nightmare on Elm Street films, but also for Jazzy, the Saw films, because she likes those.
I haven't rewatched the Saw films in so long.
Could be a good one.
That would be a good one.
We could talk about socks. Saw X. Socks.
A fun fact about my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So my girlfriend loves the Saw movies, which was shocking news to me because she is not otherwise a huge horror person outside of, like, what I show her.
Yeah.
First time she ever told me this, I was like, what? Do you mean? But yeah, my girlfriend loves the Saw movies, and she has seen all of them except the first one.
That needs to be corrected.
I know. And that information specifically that she's never seen the first one, I did not know until like a few weeks ago. And I was like, babe, what the fuck? How? I understand there's Saw movie, the concept, and Saw movie, the actual, like, movie, as like, films. First Saw is the best one in the sense that it is the best film.
Yes.
It's, like, in every conceivable way, the best film. Now, is it the best Saw film concept? Like, you know what I'm saying, right? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. Someone else will probably pick on a different one with, like, cooler and more elaborate traps or what have you. And they're like, that's the best one, which is fine. But, like, the best filmmaking, the most interesting writing, the, like, most purpose to the story is the first one.
I've only ever seen the first two, so.
I really love Saw 2.
I think Saw 2 is good. I think I like Saw 1 more.
Yes. I just care for the sequels nearly as much as I care for, like, the first two.
Right.
But like I said, I haven't rewatched them in a super long time, so.
Well, I'm hearing Saw X is the best in the series besides the first one, so.
I've heard nothing but excellent things about it, and I couldn't find the time. The week that it came out, I was just like, I couldn't make it work. I couldn't fit it into my life schedule.
I possibly could have, but also, like, since I've only seen the first two, I know that the movie takes place somewhere between the first two films, but I also feel like that would be a disservice to skip all the way to the end.
Yeah.
Like, I'd get a better appreciation for the series if I do it the release order. Random side tangent, somebody, I think it was IGN, they, like, listed the playing order that if you were to go through all the Metal Gear Solid games. And I get the idea of wanting to label things chronologically, but for a first-time player, I fucking do not recommend doing that for the Metal Gear Solid series. That ruins so many of, like, the great twists and turns you do by having one game set, like, way later. The first game set, way later, and then they go back to the third game, and that's, like, set in the 60s. But, like, knowing all the information in the way later games just makes that game set in the 60s, like, make way more sense. So
it's like people who are, like, want to show people Star Wars for the first time in chronological order. It's like, no, the fuck you don't.
You do 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, and then the sequels?
No, like, in story order, like, you start with the prequels.
Yeah, one, you go 1 through 9. Oh, yeah.
My brain doesn't work. My brain is so tired. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, Four, five, six, nine, and it's like with obviously with Solo and Rogue One mixed in there or what have you, I guess. And I'm like, that is a bad idea. Putting aside putting aside debates about the quality of the Star Wars prequels, 90% of like the big exciting moments in the Star Wars prequels that people like are there and people like entirely from the context of the original three movies.
Yes.
Like, you're not meat on the first three, on episodes 1 through 3 of Star Wars.
No, it's not the greatest way to introduce people to that franchise. What do you think about the machete order? It's 4, 5, 4, then 5, then you go back, watch 1, 2, 3, then you watch 6, and then the sequels.
I haven't done this, so I can't speak to it.
It's basically the concept of, like, you get to the big reveal of, you know, I am your father, and then you learn the entire backstory, and then 6 happening, so that the impacts of the prequels make it even more emotional climax in 6, which I get.
A similar conversation with my girlfriend last night, so my girlfriend has only seen the first A Nightmare on Elm Street.
I've seen the first 3. That's it.
Really? Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to do this
again
in the future. But, she'd only seen the first one. And last night I was like, I can show you, I was like, do you want to watch New Nightmare with me? And she said, is that the second one? And I said, no, that's like the 7th movie, technically. And she said the same thing. She was like, nope. I need to watch them all in order. Which I respect on all levels wanting to do that. And I agree that New Nightmare has way more of an impact having watched all of the movies already. So like, that's fine. But, and this is really important, Wes Craven had not seen any of the Elm Street sequels other than the first one and the third one, which he wrote. So when Wes Craven made New Nightmare, she was like, there's going to be references. And it's that, like, no, there's not, because Wes Craven didn't know any of the references.
I still respect the concept of going a series in its intended order. Yes, you know?
I think that a lot of the commentary being made has more bite, and the experience, because part of the experience of New Nightmare was like, and there's lots of things I could go on. I will not sidetrack us with this. I could go on and on and on.
Yeah, we need to get into the other Wes Craven adjacent thing.
All the ways New Nightmare is like a brilliant, brilliant movie, but like a big part of what its pitch and the idea behind it was that it made Freddy scary again, because the sequels really had turned him into like such a goofy character. Which is good in its own way, right? Which people love and enjoy and is iconic, obviously, in its own way. But that part of the point of Nightmare was that, no, Freddy's like a monster again. Freddy is scary again. And if you just go straight from the first Nightmare on Elm Street to New Nightmare, it's kind of like, well, yeah, he's scary. He was always like that.
Right.
Right. Anyway, like you said, speaking of Wes Craven...
Yeah, Wes Craven adjacent things. Looks like Scream 7's in some hot water.
Jesus Christ.
No, he's not here right now.
Okay. Let's provide some fun context real quick, right? Neve Campbell did not come back for Scream 6 because Spyglass is run by a bunch of raging misogynists who refused to pay her what she was worth. This is strike number one, right? This is problem number one. I smelled something rotten about that from the get. I was like, how the fuck are you going to do it? Like, Sydney is the heart and soul of that series. She is the final girl. She is the lead. It's her movie. It's not Ghostface, it's not Billy, it's not anyone else, it is Sydney's movie. So that was already by itself, eh. But you know what, in spite of that, Scream 6 still turned out to be really, really great. I thought Scream 6 had a lot of great things to say. I thought it fit into the scope of the series really well. I really, really liked it.
Me too.
And we have a new lead. It's Melissa Barrera. She was introduced in 5 while Sydney was still there. She's who we're following. She's the one with the character arc. That's fine. That's fine. And she's a very interesting character, actually. I know that people call her boring because she's, like, stoic and doesn't talk a lot. That's not... I don't mind her boring at all. I think she's very interesting, especially with how she's utilized in the context of the story. Cool. Awesome. Now, Melissa Barrera is not the biggest name attached. We've also got the supporting, the secondary lead, the supporting final girl, played by Jenna Ortega. Everybody knows who she is. She's, like, the most famous name attached to the series right now. Awesome, cool. Love it, love it, love it.
Arguably a bigger name.
Yeah, she is the biggest name, for sure, attached.
Yeah.
Oh, but look at that. Look at that. Look at that. The raging misogynists in charge of the Scream franchise have returned to fuck up again.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. And they fired Melissa Barrera for saying that genocide is bad.
You know, it's actually very politically controversial to say that. Like,
I don't think children should die.
Now, what's your definition of children? No, that is the argument that's happening right now.
What?
Sorry, it's a dark sense of humor on that topic, but I do like how the media has been, because she was right. Like, the way that they frame, like, children dying in Gaza is just like, these are actually just people under 18. They're not children.
Literally, no, because it's literally the, like, and I don't mean to like, I don't mean to do this per se, but I'm doing it anyway. It's literally the Hunger Games. It's literally the Hunger Games are present, so, like, they're not children. They're just they're just citizens of the districts between the ages of 12 and 18. What's a child? In quotation mark. Like, it's... I don't mean to laugh. I don't, because none of this is funny. It's just, I don't know how else to respond because it's so absurd.
I am deeply frustrated with the ways in which modern liberalism is embracing Zionism as if it's the be-all, end-all of what being Jewish means. And I'm not a Jewish person, so I can't speak to Jewish issues, but listening to other Jewish people who have spoken out against the genocide, I feel like that there's a certain way in which the, I don't like to, like, bring this up because, like, any form of bigotry is, like, genuinely awful, but there's a way in which certain elements are framing, disingenuously framing certain people as anti-Semitic for disagreeing with the violence that's occurring, and that framing of, oh, this thing is anti-Semitic, is doing a really good job of covering up for genuine anti-Semitism, you know?
Anti-Semitism into a hysterical non-problem. And see, there's a lot of people on the left, in concept, right? And there's a lot of people on the left falling for that in a way that's very frustrating.
Mm.
People taking this and letting anti-Semitism become an accusation worth dismissing rather than stopping for a moment to consider if your language or your direction of the attitude or what have you is being anti-Semitic or not. That's been very frustrating to watch. But this was the excuse they tried to use to justify firing Melissa Barrera. They tried to say that her comments were anti-Semitic, and they were not. She did not even mention Jewish people, I think, outside of the context of saying that she hoped that she's praying for, like, the safety of Jewish lives.
She said that Western media is not appropriately covering it in a way that is fair, essentially. That's pretty much all she said. And their framing of it was, well, she's saying that Jews control the media, which is a incredibly disingenuous framing of that.
Framing of what she actually said. And
yeah.
Oh, and let's get to it. The GOAT, Jenna Ortega, fucking quit.
Peace.
They're trying to pretend that she quit for different reasons, and, like, no one's buying that.
It's because they know it'll make them look bad.
Yes.
And I think they know when they're scrambling that they messed up.
They have to. They absolutely have to. Because, like, I don't believe for a second that they were willing to let Jenna Ortega walk away. Because, like, she's the biggest name attached to your movie.
Well, and you also set up in the last movie, literally have a setup for a sequel of a group you're calling the Core Four.
Oh, but now two of them are gone, and it's the two who are the main characters.
Two of the main characters.
Like, all respects to Jasmine Savoy Brown and the other guy. I know his first name is Nathan.
Okay, I don't remember their names, unfortunately.
No, because they're very talented, and Jasmine Savoy Brown is also in Yellow Jackets, and she's great on that.
I've seen that actor before. Mason, he said?
Yeah, I know his first name is Mason. I cannot remember his last name for the life of me. The one who plays Chad, you know, the one who's supposed to be, like, hot and sexy.
yes. I think he's talented, and I've seen him in other things. My brain is just going. His name is Mason Good. Okay.
Mason Good, yeah. All respect to them and their talent, and I think that they're both wonderful in both of the Scream movies that they're in.
That's why I knew him. He's in Love, Victor. Sorry.
I think they're both great, and I love having them around. And I personally love that Chad has taken on the Dewey torch. Of getting stabbed an impossible number of times and still surviving.
Also being a decent guy.
Yeah, and also just being decent all the way through. But they're not, like, they don't care, they're not strong enough characters to carry a sequel. So, like, these are your main characters, are Sam and Tara, and you've lost both of those actresses because you fired one and the other one quit because you racist and misogynistically fired the other one.
I mean, that would be kind of like if the Scream series got rid of Courtney Cox and Nev Campbell, like, in the third movie or something, you know?
They'd never do that. This is part of what's so funny is, in fact, that, like, in a lot of ways, this echoes, and it's not the same, and I don't want to say that it's nearly as bad as what happened with Scream 3, but it echoes so many of the pre-production problems with Scream 3. So many of them. Because Neve Campbell had scheduling issues. She wanted to be in 3, and she ended up still being in it. But the reason Neve Campbell is on a different set somewhere far away from every other character in the movie for 98% of Scream 3 is because Neve Campbell had scheduling conflicts, and instead of delaying their movie an extra few months so that their star actress could be in it.
They went ahead and filmed the rest of it?
They went ahead and they just pushed production through on it, and it's like such a... So it does echo that. It's like this is the history of this with Scream. That's really in the production from the producers, never from the creatives. The creatives always do their best. But, like, so that's, again, funny in its own way, but just awful and frustrating. And it's really, it's genuinely very, very upsetting that the people in charge of Scream, which I've explained this so many times and gone on of so many times and how much I love Scream, but, like, Scream is foundationally such a feminist series. It's such a collection of movies that is fundamentally about like the way the media treats and engages with women.
Yeah.
And turns like the violence against women into a spectacle. And it's very, very, very good and smart series of movies. And so for such a feminist and like socially introspective series to be in the hands of like these people who are beyond clearly being Zionists and being Islamophobic, et cetera, who are also just clearly raging misogynists, because this pattern of, and apparently they had offered Jenna Ortega like nowhere near enough money. They were offering her a 6-figure salary, and it's like, are you fucking kidding me?
It's Jenna Ortega.
It's Jenna Ortega. So like the fact that this is a pattern with them, of them like brutally disrespecting their lead actresses, it's like these people don't deserve the rights to this franchise. I'm sorry.
Time to hand the keys over to somebody else.
Well, that's literally the only solution. Like, I'm sorry. I'm seeing people left, like, there's a subset of, like, really annoying bootlicker Scream fans who I don't believe understand anything about these movies that they claim to love at all, who are, like, either quasi-defending the studio on Twitter or just outright defending the studio, and it's all so annoying. And it's a lot of, like, well, I love Scream, and we didn't boycott 6 when Nev refuse to come back because they disrespected her. And I'm like, do you understand how this is different? How this is like a fundamental, morally different thing. I'm not even going to stand here and say that people should necessarily boycott Scream 7. I'm saying they shouldn't make it.
At least not without mending these bridges, I suppose.
No, they just shouldn't make it. Like, if they should at this point, because I don't think there's a way to fix it. Like, they can offer Melissa and Jenna more money and, like, apologize, but I'm so sure that neither of them will come back at this point. And even if they did, it's still kind of a bad taste in everyone's mouth.
Yeah.
And it's also the thing about Scream is that I don't need, first of all, Scream can be done. Scream doesn't have to be an infinite franchise to begin with. But also on that, like, Scream definitely doesn't need a movie every other year.
Are you sure? Because like it seems like the series needs to be like a Marvel series. We need to do one every 6 months.
No, it's like it's, I guess.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
No, I know. I just, it's part of why it gets to me. And like I said, I love 6. I think Scream 6 turned out really, really great. But like Scream 4 is as great as it is because Scream 4 had 10 years of time to like have something new to say.
Right.
It had a lot of breathing room. It had a lot of growing room. And it's the same thing with 5.
Yeah.
And the reason 6 was able to be so good, despite being a direct sequel and not having, is because it was like the premise for 6 ended up like building directly off of 5 in a really good way. But like Scream can sit. Scream can get put on a shelf and be left alone for like 10 years until the rights transfer to somebody else, or like management at Spyglass at the very least is different. And we can.
What did they expect? Did they think that like people would be on their side?
I guess so. I'm noticing that a lot of politicians and wealthy celebrities, not all, I suppose, but a lot of them have a very skewed perspective on the public opinion of this situation.
I think because they live in their own little bubbles.
Well, yes, but it's so strict. Like, I don't know how at this juncture you don't understand that blind support for Israel and the disturbing dehumanization of Palestinians is not selling with the public. Children's hospitals are getting bombed in Palestine, in Gaza. it is I hate to compare real tragedies to like children's fiction, but like it's literally in the Hunger Games. This was a thing that the evil hand rubbing dictator villain did so that the audience could know how cartoonishly evil he was bombing a hospital. So like I don't know like how you like you cannot have this be the dynamic of these clearly like militarily disadvantaged people having like their most vulnerable populations actively targeted and murdered by the state of Israel. Like you can't, I don't know how you look at that. Even if you are a fucking ghoul and you have your own like financial investment or religious investment in Zionism. And when I say religious investment, I'm not talking about Jewish people. I'm talking about Christian Zionists who want Israel to exist for the end times, which is a far more prevalent group of people in the United States than Zionist Jews.
Yes.
But like you support Israel for your own weird, ghoulish reasons. I don't know how you don't see the writing on the wall about the fact that the public is not falling for it.
Get it. Outside of, again, them living in their own little weird bubble.
Yeah.
And also, I noticed that having a certain amount of money separates you mentally from, like, everyone else for some reason. Like, you live in your own plane of existence when you have that much money.
I guess you have to. It's just...
So,
you know,
I was just gonna say, it's a shit situation.
It's a shit situation, and Scream deserves better. Melissa and Jenna definitely deserve better.
Fans deserve better.
Fans absolutely deserve better. And Wes Craven's legacy deserves better. This is another thing, and this is one last thing before we move on to our subtopic here. As another capacity in which it's pissing me off that a bunch of supposed Scream fans are trying to dismiss what's happened to Nev and is now happening to Melissa, is Wes Craven never would have let this happen on his watch.
Yeah.
Absolutely the fuck not. And if it had, he wouldn't have had it. We would not hear the end of it from him.
A much different scenario with him still alive and in charge.
Yeah.
Like to say that.
There's a lot of reasons for that outside of the fact that Wes Craven was an extremely smart, extremely educated, extremely like worldly and curious man. He had a really fantastic, I'm doing my thesis on Wes Craven right now, and I've been rereading like a lot of interviews from him, like especially from the late 70s, early 80s. And like even then, like there's this interview from 1979 where he's like basically directly calling out the impacts of the bullshit of white supremacy and American imperialism. And he's like, we fuck up everybody else's lives and politics and countries and societies and then wonder why they don't like us. Like, Wes Craven was an extremely aware man about the state of the world, and he was an extremely empathetic and kind person. He was good to his actors, and especially his actresses, who were the leads in these violent movies. He cared a lot about the actresses in his movies feeling comfortable and safe on his sets, because he was filming such, like, gruesome shit. Like, he wouldn't have had it. He wouldn't have had it. So, like, but my point with this is that Wes Craven's legacy deserves better than this.
Yeah. 100%. Very frustrating.
Very frustrating. Thank you. I'm sorry. That was...
No, it's good. You know who was slightly off slight topic before we go to the other topic? In my Discord, which people can join if they want to, I do a monthly screening of a movie. And last night we watched The Toxic Avenger because, duh. the new remake is coming out soon with Peter Dinklage, and it looks amazing too.
I'm excited for that. But I'm excited for basically anything with Peter Dinklage in it.
Same. Him playing Toxie is such a great choice, by the way. Like, it's not one I would immediately think of, but it's amazing.
Well, this is Peter Dinklage's, like, greatest skill. This is his greatest thing, is that he is always cast in the thing that you would never have, like, picked him out of a hat for.
Yeah. And
always the most genius decision anybody ever made.
He's just such a versatile actor. He's great, honestly. Yeah. I was mentioning that. I found out that apparently Lloyd Kaufman is really good with his crew and he's always been he explained before that, like, his number one rule on set is human lives matter the most. So he cares about safety and comfortability, which is good.
Oh my God. Caring about safety of your actors.
I know, right?
Cats and dogs living together.
That's hysteria. He's not fucking John Landis.
No, my fucking...
And moving on, I'll let you introduce our subtopic. Go ahead, Liz.
Okay, yeah, speaking of Spyglass and Wes Craven fans, Eli Roth has a new movie out.
He does, and we both saw it.
We both saw it before he made an Instagram post about Israel. We both.
I saw it after, but I work at a theater and I have employee tickets, so no money went to him.
Yeah. Well, I guess technically I saw it with my AMC stubs, but I don't know if that's. I don't know how
money goes to AMC on that, I think.
Money moving wise, but so here's the thing, folks. Here's the tea, because we are honest people here at the Gals of Geekdom. Thanksgiving was pretty good.
I had a blast of it.
Yeah, pretty good movie. Pretty good slasher movie. It's not the what was advertised with the trailer back from Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. Or not Roadhouse, Grindhouse. Thank you. I'm tired. I had 2 hours of sleep last night.
I will say that it's far more comedic than the trailer that came out for it this year. Purports it to be a bit.
Yeah. I think
but it's not as goofy as the original Grind. Like, it's in the middle. Like, I'd say it still, like, embraces the Grindhouse in terms of the comedy, even though it's a little bit more subtle.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I want to say the two movies that it reminded me of the most the whole time I was watching it was Scream.
Yeah, same.
and My Bloody Valentine. Which makes sense, right? I think that I can't imagine, because My Bloody Valentine is kind of like this quintessential, like, chintzy holiday themed slasher movie that has all of these, like, punny kills featuring, like, candy heart boxes and shit.
It's funny. That's another slasher movie I need to see. I saw the remake, but that was it.
The remake's actually pretty decent.
Yeah, I enjoyed it when I saw it.
My Bloody Valentine remake just fine. And here's the thing: My Bloody Valentine is not super funny as a movie, but I am not surprised that this was would have been like one of the blueprints that Eli Roth had out in front of him when crafting the chintzy Thanksgiving themed slasher movie, right? Like, of course it was. After coming out of it, I was like, that makes so much sense though, because of course it reminds me of My Bloody Valentine.
I mean, and the gore was kind of slapsticky in this movie too. Like, yes. It was gruesome, but it was just definitely like, meant to make you laugh more so than anything. I think that was the point.
It leaned into the ridiculousness more than the,
Yeah, I didn't feel gross, like, out watching the movie at all. I more laughed at how silly it felt, which is good.
And
that's what I wanted from it.
I think the trailer, Because that's what it's got to be. I'm sorry. Like, a movie about a Thanksgiving pilgrim-themed slasher.
Well, and then Grindhouse in and of itself was kind of like a campy parody of that style.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it kind of had to do that. It would feel weird if it didn't. Like, which is why I'm of the opinion that I think I prefer Planet Terror in the Grindhouse pairing, because I think that leans more into the comedy of it than Death Proof does. I think Death Proof is bad. I think I actually prefer Planet Terror, because I think it leans more into the tone that a lot of the fake trailers and the rest of the experience was, while I think Tarantino was a little bit more focused on actually trying to recreate that style
of these movies. Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I also, like, it's the very base problem of the fact also, and again, Death Proof is my favorite, but Death Proof should have been first.
Yeah, I think so.
And those motherfucking Weinsteins were like, no, put the action adventure climax one first. And it's like, well, now Death Proof feels boring.
Comparatively, it's a bit more. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a bad movie. I'll say that again. What I'm saying is that I feel like the tone of that kind of is a little mismatched. Like, they both had similar basic concepts, but then, like, Robert Rodriguez and Eli Roth and Edgar Wright were all like, oh, we're kind of doing like a joke parody of it. And then Tarantino was like, no, I'm actually going to make a 70s film.
Yeah. Zombie.
And Rob Zombie, yeah, I won't forget Rob Zombie. A werewolf woman of the SS, right? Which is also funny, too.
That one shouldn't get made into an actual movie. But the trailer, but the fake trailer is very funny.
How about Don't? What do you think about Don't? Edgar Wright's Don't. If you're thinking about going into... But I actually think the Thanksgiving was probably the funniest of those trailers, in my opinion.
That has the most, like, meat to make an actual movie out of as a concept. The other ones are much, much more singular jokes.
Right. I do love in the Thanksgiving trailer where it's like the detectives are looking over the body of the person in the turkey outfit that's been decapitated, and he puts his finger, smells the blood. He's like, yep, that's blood.
Yep. That trailer reminds me more than anything else of the trailer for Last House on the Left.
Yeah, it's more like a parody of trailer styles than an actual concept for a movie. Yeah. You know?
Because Last House on the Left had that really famous trailer where the guy repeated over and over again, it's just a movie.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So that's always the one that Don't reminds me of the most, is that this just it is repetitive.
So, but yes, we both tend to agree that that Thanksgiving is a really fun time. It's not as goofy as the original Grindhouse trailer, but it's also not as serious as the recent trailers for it try to kind of paint it out to be. It's a lot more, I'd say it's a horror comedy. I think that's fair to call it that at that point. There's enough like laughs and jokes in it that it was more of a silly experience.
I guess when I think about the you think about the climax especially, which is goofy as fuck. absolutely very, very silly climax to that movie. I would agree. I also, obviously Patrick Dempsey's in it. I love Patrick Dempsey. He's great. He's my favorite part of the movie.
But I don't want to spoil anything. So, but I do recommend seeing it if you can. But if you also don't feel like it's supporting Eli Roth,
or Spyglass,
you don't have to.
In the wake of their
Spyglass. Spyglass. Yes.
That's super understandable. And I am sorry you can't, you, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that these people ruined a fun movie.
That's true. They definitely ruined it. So, but I never really trusted Roth. Like, he always gave me sort of certain vibes, you know?
Yeah. And the thing about Eli Roth is he's always been, like, he's very bro-y. He's very frat boy. And that's always been left a bad taste in my mouth. But I've always given him the benefit of the doubt because I think that even his bad movies, they always have meat. There's always something interesting.
Yeah. So at least this movie feels very, I would say, comparatively actually to a lot of his films, this film is a pretty safe one to enter into, you know?
Absolutely. I think that's part of why the trailer has such a different tone than the movie, is I think that the trailer was trying to push, like, what people expect when they see the name Eli Roth. People expect Hostel.
Yeah, and right? The film was not Hostel, you know?
It's not. It's not anywhere near that violent or graphic.
I mean, it is gory and gruesome, but it's definitely more played for laughs. It's kind of like watching, like, Dead Alive, you know?
Interesting. Honestly, like, there's, you could probably, I think this would actually be such an interesting thing for a film class, is you could put similar kill scenes from Hostel and from Thanksgiving, play them back to back, and be like, why do these read so differently? And, like, examine the different ways that they're shot and composed and the way people are, like, delivering their reactions. I just think that'd be super interesting. Sorry. That was me getting trailed off thinking about it.
Oh, no, it is interesting. So when you get a chance to see the movie, if it's on streaming or if you can get free tickets or whatever, because if you don't want to support Spyglass right now or Roth, that's totally valid. But I also think I really love this movie. And, I can't say that about Roth's other movies completely. So, you know, take with that what you will. It gave me that sort of slasher movie that I feel like, I don't know, there hasn't been a lot of, you know.
But it's fun.
But it's fun.
It was a good time. Oh, if you want a less morally compromised slasher, it's less good, but it is very, very fun. That's also a seasonally appropriate. It's a Wonderful Knife.
You know, I want to see it. You did see it?
I did. I got to see it in the theater during its limited release. It's very fun. The acting sounds good.
It's coming to Shudder soon, right?
Yeah. It was Shudder original.
I'll watch it there then.
Yeah. But that one's very fun. It's very good. That one's really gay, which of course it is, but, like, that one's super, super gay.
Good.
Lots of lesbians.
Justin Long's in that, right?
Say again?
Justin Long is in that, right?
Yep, it's got Justin Long, and it's got Catherine Isabel.
Okay.
Ginger Snap.
That's cool. I'm currently watching the new Goosebumps show, and Justin Long is in it, and he's great in that, actually.
Oh, good. Justin Long's had a pretty good string of years here, because he was in Barbarian, which was fucking, like not to backtrack.
Oh, and he was great in that movie. I mean, he was such a monster, but yeah.
Barbarian whipped ass. I love that movie. I could go on for so long about all of the reasons Barbarian is, like, such a great fucking movie. But Justin Long was really good in that one, too. So Justin Long's having a good few years. It's nice. Nice. That's a good
next. He's choosing some good horror movies and shows and stuff.
He's picking good projects. His agent should get a raise.
Well, and he's talented, so.
Yeah.
So, I do recommend you see Goosebumps, by the way. It's definitely worth the watch. If you haven't.
I've been meaning to get around to it, but.
Yeah, it's definitely made for an older audience. So, which is interesting. But not like where it's not graphic. Like, it's still on Disney Plus, but it's definitely more, more violent and more mature than, like, you know, like a typical Goosebumps adaptation would be.
Yeah, then like the old VHS from the 90s.
Right, it sits right in between Fear Street and the Goosebumps live-action remake movies they did with Jack Black. Like, it's right in that, like, middle zone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's worth watching. But I want to continue, but today, unfortunately, has to be a short episode because we both are a little bit on the busy side. But, But yeah, Lizzie, did you want to let people know where they can find you?
You can find me at Lizzie Lemon Drop on Twitter still. It's still Twitter to me.
Still Twitter. It will always be Twitter.
I still have Twitter on my phone. Shit, still Twitter.
Oh, that's right. We were hanging out, and I'm like, wait a minute. Yours is still like, Twitter?
Did you get a Twitter notification? Like, you said it. You said it like Christ had come down from above.
This is yeah. Weird.
And the final whore on TikTok.
Awesome. Go follow her and do all that things. I'm also on Twitter at Crystal W. Rocks, and I have a Medium account where you can read my articles, Crystal Williams, over there. But yeah, Lizzie, it was great having you back. Hopefully we can plan some more episodes with Jazzy in the near future when we can all, like, coordinate a good time. But with that, we love you, everybody, and we'll see you on the next episode. Goodbye.